Chapter 53. Mr. Datchery, with a sudden change of countenance, gives her a sudden look. It's opium, dearie. Neither more nor less. And it's like a human creature so far, that you always hear what can be said against it, but seldom what can be said in its praise. Apostrophe, Mr. Datchery begins very slowly, to count out the sum demanded of him. Greedily watching his hands, she continues to hold forth on the great example set him. It was last Christmas Eve, just arter dark, the once that I was here afore, when the young gentleman gave me the 3 and 6. Apostrophe Mr. Datchery stops in his counting, finds he has counted wrong, shakes his money together, and begins again. And the young gentleman's name, apostrophe she adds, was Edwin. Apostrophe, Mr. Datchery drops some money, stoops to pick it up, and reddens with the exertion as he asks, "How do you know the young gentleman's name?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, I asked him for it, and he told it me. I only asked him the two questions, what was his christened name, and whether he'd a sweetheart? And he answered, "Edwin," and he hadn't. Apostrophe, Mr. Datchery pauses with the selected coins in his hand, rather as if he were falling into a brown study of their value, and couldn't bear to part with them. The woman looks at him distrustfully, and with her anger brewing for the event of his thinking better of the gift, but he bestows it on her, as if he were abstracting his mind from the sacrifice, and with many servile thanks she goes her way. John Jasper's lamp is kindled, and his lighthouse is shining when Mr. Datchery returns alone towards it. As mariners on a dangerous voyage, approaching an iron-bound coast, may look along the beams of the warning light to the haven lying beyond it that may never be reached, so Mr. Datchery's wistful gaze is directed to this beacon, and beyond. His object in now revisiting his lodging is merely to put on the hat which seems so superfluous an article in his wardrobe. It is 10:30 by the cathedral clock, when he walks out into the precincts again. He lingers and looks about him, as though, the enchanted hour when Mr. Durdles may be stoned home having struck, he had some expectation of seeing the imp who is appointed to the mission of stoning him. In effect, that power of evil is abroad. Having nothing living to stone at the moment, he is discovered by Mr. Datchery in the unholy office of stoning the dead, through the railings of the churchyard. The imp finds this a relishing and piquing pursuit, firstly, because their resting place is announced to be sacred, and secondly, because the tall headstones are sufficiently like themselves, on their beat in the dark, to justify the delicious fancy that they are hurt when hit. Mr. Datchery hails with him. "Halloa," winks. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he acknowledges the hail with. "Halloa, Dick." Apostrophe, apostrophe, their acquaintance seemingly having been established on a familiar footing. "But, I say," apostrophe, he remonstrates, "don't dare go a making my name public. I never means to plead to no name, mind dare. When they says to me in the lockup, 'A going to put me down in the book, what's your name?' I says to them, 'Find out.' Likewise when they says, 'What's your religion?' I says, 'Find out.'" Apostrophe, which, it may be observed in passing, it would be immensely difficult for the state, however statistical, to do. Asides which, apostrophe adds the boy, "there ain't no family of Winxes." Apostrophe, "I think there must be." Apostrophe, "yer lie, there ain't. The travelers give me the name on account of my getting no settled sleep, and being knocked up all night, whereby I gets one eye roused open afore I've shut the other. That's what Winks means. Deputy's the nighest name to indict me by. But yer wouldn't catch me pleading to that, neither." Apostrophe, "deputy be it always then. We two are good friends, eh, deputy?" Apostrophe, "jolly good." Apostrophe, "I forgave you the debt you owed me, when we first became acquainted, and many of my sixpences have come your way since, eh, deputy?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "ah. And what's more, yer ain't no friend o' Jarsper's. What did he go a histing me off my legs for?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "what indeed? but never mind him now. A shilling of mine is going your way tonight, deputy. You have just taken in a lodger I have been speaking to, an infirm woman with a cough. Apostrophe, puffer, apostrophe, assents deputy, with a shrewd leer of recognition, and smoking an imaginary pipe, with his head very much on one side, and his eyes very much out of their places. Hopium puffer. Apostrophe, what is her name? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Her Royal Highness the Princess Puffer. Apostrophe, she has some other name than that. Where does she live? Apostrophe, apostrophe, up in London. Among the Jacks. Apostrophe, the sailors? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I said so. Jacks, and chainer men, and other knifers. Apostrophe, I should like to know, through you, exactly where she lives. Apostrophe, all right. Give us old. Apostrophe, a shilling passes, and, in that spirit of confidence which should pervade all business transactions between principles of honor, this piece of business is considered done. But here's a lark. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cries deputy. Where did yer think her Royal Highness is a going to tomorrow morning? Blessed if she ain't a going to the Kinfree Durrell. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he greatly prolongs the word in his ecstasy, and smites his leg, and doubles himself up in a fit of shrill laughter. How do you know that, deputy? Apostrophe, apostrophe, 'cause she told me so just now. She said she must be up, and out o' purpose. She says, deputy, I must have a early wash, and make myself as well as I can, for I may go in to take a turn at the Kinfree Durrell. Apostrophe, he separates the syllables with his former zest, and, not finding his sense of the ludicrous sufficiently relieved, by stamping about on the pavement, breaks into a slow and stately dance, perhaps supposed to be performed by the dean. Mr. Datchery receives the communication with a well-satisfied though pondering face, and breaks up the conference. Returning to his quaint lodging, and sitting long over the supper of bread and cheese and salad and ale which Mrs. Tope has left prepared for him, he still sits when his supper is finished. At length he rises, throws open the door of a corner cupboard, and refers to a few uncouth chalk strokes on its inner side. I like, apostrophe, says Mr. Datchery, the old tavern way of keeping scores. Illegible except to the scorer. The scorer not committed, the score debited with what is against him. Ha! A very small score this, a very poor score. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he sighs over the contemplation of its poverty, takes a bit of chalk from one of the cupboard shelves, and pauses with it in his hand, uncertain what addition to make to the account. I think a moderate stroke, apostrophe, he concludes, is all I am justified in scoring up. Apostrophe, so, suits the action to the word, closes the cupboard, and goes to bed. A brilliant morning shines on the old city. Its antiquities and ruins are surpassingly beautiful, with a lusty ivy gleaming in the sun, and the rich trees waving in the balmy air. Changes of glorious light from moving boughs, songs of birds, scents from gardens, woods, and fields, or, rather, from the one great garden of the whole cultivated island in its yielding time penetrate into the cathedral, subdue its earthy odor, and preach the resurrection and the life. The cold stone tombs of centuries ago grow warm, and flecks of brightness dart into the sternest marble corners of the building, fluttering their light wings. Comes Mr. Tope with his large keys, and yawningly unlocks and sets open. Come Mrs. Tope and attendant sweeping sprites. Come, in due time, organist and bellows boy, peeping down from the red curtains in the loft, fearlessly flapping dust from books up at that remote elevation, and whisking it from stops and pedals. Come sundry rooks, from various quarters of the sky, back to the great tower, who may be presumed to enjoy vibration, and to know that bell and organ are going to give it them. Come a very small and straggling congregation indeed, chiefly from Minor Canon Corner and the precincts. Come Mr. Crisparkle, fresh and bright, and his ministering brethren, not quite so fresh and bright. come the choir in a hurry, always in a hurry, and struggling into their nightgowns at the last moment, like children shirking bed, and comes John Jasper leading their line. Last of all comes Mr. Datchery into a stall, one of a choice empty collection very much at his service, and glancing about him for Her Royal Highness the Princess Puffer. The service is pretty well advanced before Mr. Datchery can discern Her Royal Highness. But by that time he has made her out, in the shade. She is behind a pillar, carefully withdrawn from the choir master's view, but regards him with the closest attention. All unconscious of her presence, he chants and sings. She grins when he is most musically fervid, and yes, Mr. Datchery sees her do it. Shakes her fist at him behind the pillar's friendly shelter. Mr. Datchery looks again, to convince himself. Yes, again. As ugly and withered as one of the fantastic carvings on the under brackets of the stall seats, as malignant as the evil one, as hard as the big brass eagle holding the sacred books upon his wings, and, according to the sculptor's representation of his ferocious attributes, not at all converted by them, she hugs herself in her lean arms, and then shakes both fists at the leader of the choir. And at that moment, outside the grated door of the choir, having eluded the vigilance of Mr. Tope by shifty resources in which he is an adept, Deputy peeps, sharp-eyed, through the bars, and stares astounded from the threatener to the threatened. The service comes to an end, and the servitors disperse to breakfast. Mr. Datchery accosts his last new acquaintance outside, when the choir, as much in a hurry, to get their bedgowns off, as they were but now, to get them on, have scuffled away. Well, mistress. Good morning. You have seen him? Apostrophe, I've seen him, dearie, I've seen him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and you know him? Apostrophe, apostrophe, know him. Better far than all the reverend parsons put together know him. Apostrophe, Mrs. Tope's care has spread a very neat, clean breakfast ready for her lodger. Before sitting down to it, he opens his corner cupboard door, takes his bit of chalk from its shelf, adds one thick line to the score, extending from the top of the cupboard door to the bottom, and then falls to with an appetite. Asterisk, 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 end of the Project Gutenberg ebook, The Mystery of Edwin Drood, asterisk, 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 this file should be named DROOD10. TXT or DROOD10. Zip corrected editions of our ebooks, get a new number, DROOD11. TXT versions based on separate sources get new letter, DROOD10ATXT. Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as public domain in the US, unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we usually do not keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper edition. We are now trying to release all our ebooks 1 year in advance of the official release dates, leaving time for better editing. Please be encouraged to tell us about any error or corrections, even years after the official publication date. Please note neither this listing nor its contents are final till midnight of the last day of the month of any such announcement. The official release date of all Project Gutenberg ebooks is at midnight, Central Time, of the last day of the stated month. A preliminary version may often be posted for suggestion, comment and editing by those who wish to do so. Most people start at our websites at http Gutenberg net or http promo net page. These websites include award-winning information about Project Gutenberg, including how to donate, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter free. Those of you who want to download any ebook before announcement can get to them as follows, and just download by date. This is also a good way to get them instantly upon announcement, as the indexes our catalogers produce obviously take a while after an announcement goes out in the Project Gutenberg newsletter. HTTP www.biblio or gutenbergetext04 ftp ftp biblio Org pub docs books Gutenberg etext04 or etext03020109998979695949393929 or 90. Just search by the first five letters of the file name you want, as it appears in our newsletters. Information about Project Gutenberg, one page. We produce about $2 million for each hour we work. The time it takes us, a rather conservative estimate, is 50 hours to get an ebook selected, entered, proofread, edited, copyright searched and analyzed, the copyright letters written, etc. Our projected audience is 100 million readers. If the value per text is nominally estimated at $1, then we produce $2 million per hour in 2002 as we release over 100 new text files per month. 1240 more ebooks in 2001 for a total of 4,000 plus we are already on our way to trying for 2,000 more ebooks in 2002. If they reach just 1-2% of the world's population then the total will reach over half a trillion ebooks given away by year's end. The goal of Project Gutenberg is to give away 1 trillion ebooks. This is 10,000 titles each to 100 million readers, which is only about 4% of the present number of computer users. Here is the briefest record of our progress. Asterisk means estimated, colon, ebooks year month, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.